This is an oral history interview of Russell E. Johnson, Jr., an MP, Spec 4 in Vietnam. The interviewer is myself, Dwight D. Daniel, a volunteer at the National Museum of the Pacific War, located in Fredericksburg, Texas. Today is 19 August 2003, and this interview is taking place at Mr. Johnson's home. This interview is in support of the Center for Pacific War Studies, which is the archive for the preservation of historical information of the National Museum for the Pacific War, Texas Parks and Wildlife. This is tape 2, side A. Let's make sure. Got it. Okay, you were kicking out these poor lieutenants that didn't work the list, and nobody loved you anymore.
I wasn't kicking them out, I just wasn't letting them in. one of them said he was going to go in. I said, sir, if you go in there and you're not on this list, I'm going to go next door to the general's office and I'm going to knock on his door.
And give you a little talk, have him a little talk to you?
Yeah. And somebody's going to talk with you. Well, he stopped.
Wow.
And, well, after being out there in Long Bend, and I was leaving, they were just completing the amphitheater for the Bob Hope show that was going to come.
Ah, okay.
I never did get to see him, but there was a kind of a little gully that they made into an amphitheater with sandbags. And they sent me over to Benoit to the French Chateau. And I stayed over there about a month. They had an open mess over there, and I was eating a New York strip steak one afternoon. Oh man, you get that for $2.
Wow.
And some guy come in and wanted to know if anybody here had operated a M60 before. I said, yeah, I have. Well, he said, would you like to ride shotgun on a chopper out here? I said, well, I just can't arbitrarily hop on it and go. I'll have to clear it with my platoon sergeant. Well, he said no. I'm glad he said no, because the next day I saw it, that chopper looked like Swiss cheese.
Wow.
Anyhow, after I left, there's one instance, this general there was in Long Bend. We guarded his chateau also. And one of the guys, he was from New York. I recognized the general. It was General Crittenden. And he came out and I said, how you doing tonight? General, he said, no problem. And he had pet geese. And they would come around and peck at your legs.
Oh, great.
And the guy that was on duty in front of his chateau, he asked him, I said, how do you like my geese? He said, well, hell, they'd look a lot better if they were on the kitchen, on the dinner table.
Wow.
Oh, he didn't know it was the general.
Well, they do make good early warnings, so maybe that's why he had it.
Yeah, they're the good watchdogs if you can put up with all that honking all the time.
Yeah, because otherwise it's got to be real weird to have pet geese.
Yeah, well, the thing was, anytime the wind blows, they're going to honk.
I know that.
And I left there, and they sent me back down to company. And at the company, we had a appreciation dinner by the CO and all the other lieutenants, first sergeant and everything, and they took us out someplace, and we had steak, barbecued steak, and said, somebody said, let's go swimming next to a river. Well, I've jumped in, hell, I swim real good. Then one of the first sergeant or somebody come around, get out of that water, Charlie might have it in mind. So we got up out of the water. And next thing you know, I'm on boat patrol in the Saigon Harbor.
These were the Army boats or Navy boats?
They were Navy boats, but the Army, they were given to the Army.
Okay.
And we operated in Saigon Harbor, and there was the main harbor, and then there was what they call Newport. It was an addition built by PA&E, the Pacific Architects and Engineers, civilian. And we had to patrol up and down all the way up there and back. And being out on the water like that, you see some weird things. You saw all these Charlies, and I call them Charlies, okay? Mm-hmm. They were loading flour into this big sampan. Well, they got too much in it. Made it top heavy. It just swapped ends.
Wow.
Saw that live in the color. And that's where I got shot at on, was down at the old wharf, the old harbor. And we would go on sampans, and the usually had a QC and a white mice.
Man, what's the QC?
Quantcom, same thing as MP.
Oh, that's what I thought. So what's the white mice is the policeman, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Vietnamese police. They all wore white uniforms.
Right.
That's why we call them white mice. And we'd go on a sampan, and I'd stay on ship and let them look. And I had my 14 with me, and it looked like we were going to get in any trouble. I was going to open up on them. That didn't run anything like that, but except for that night that we got fired on, and they shot out the searchlight on top of the boat, 50-foot steel hull boat. It wasn't one of those Higgins boats like...
you see on TV all the time.
Yeah, PBRs.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't like that. This is twin diesels, and it made a draft larger than what the PBR did.
Okay.
And I got real good at driving it.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, you want to pull in parallel park to the dock, you got twin engines, you play with them.
Right.
And you just move yourself right on into there. And
not bad for a Texas boy.
No, well, not first time I've seen a boat either. While I was still there with the company, they said, well, we're going to take y'all out to rifle range. Familiarize yourself with the weapons that you got. I said, isn't it a little bit too late for me to try to zero this rifle in when I've had it for almost 9 months? Well, anyway, we went up there and we fired them. And they said, put your rifles down and try one of these. Well, they had us a M79 grenade launcher. Those were a hoot. I love firing those.
Yeah.
Because you could follow the projectile downrange. Well, Charlie is not dumb. The next day, they sent the rest of the company out to the very same rifle range. First time somebody laid down on the firing line, the landmine went off. Blew part of his belly off.
Wow.
He survived. And they killed a couple of Kong. And this E-7 that was getting out of the deucing half at the time the landmine went off, skinned his knee on the back of the deucing half.
Got a purple heart
on it. Got a purple heart. Jesus, I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, man.
A new low was reached.
I couldn't believe that. Well, let me tell you this much. One day before I was ever sent up to Long Bend, one of my compadres from my room, we were going to go on duty that morning, and so we were walking down to the Open Mess, which is about a block and a half down from where their hotel was, to eat breakfast. And he was late by 2 minutes. By the time we got down there, we started walking. We were about halfway down there, and a claymore went off in front of that Open Mess.
Whoa.
If he hadn't have been late, we'd have been there. Anyway, it killed a Vietnamese and injured a couple of GIs. And then one morning, we came downstairs and I said, don't go outside. The white mice found a claymore and a bicep across the street. So we waited about 20 minutes. I said, man, I got to relieve somebody here. You know, I mean, they've been on duty all night long. They need to be relieved. And finally they declared that the area was clean. So we went on about our way. About that, while I was waiting there, I met the CO of mine that was at West Point and one of my squad sergeants.
Wow.
They'd sent them over there. I said,
small world.
I said, y'all, I'm a short diver. How are y'all? You know, they just got in country. Well, after we got a directive that all units in Saigon would move out to Long Bend. And like I said, there were 40 tents when I got there. When I left, there was over 2,000 or more.
Wow.
It was as far as the eye could see. It was at least a mile and a half long, Long Bend was, with nothing but tents.
Wow.
Whenever I was on duty and I felt a supply sergeant screwing up, I said, well, you know, nothing serious anyway. Minor infraction. I said, Sergeant, I'm not going to take you in, but I'll be by to see you in a couple of days.
We can negotiate here.
Yeah, we can negotiate here. I need a couple of cases of C's and a pair of jungle boots.
Gotcha.
Well, I got them.
Good deal.
And one of the guys that, I don't know if he's in back of this picture or not, but this is me on duty. I've just been relieved of duty in 66 up the main gate. Anyway, one of these guys that came, he was from Chicago. He was a mama's boy and he was meticulous about his appearance. He'd floss, and every time he brushed his teeth, he'd floss. And every hair had to be perfectly in place before he put his helmet. I said, man, you fix to put a helmet on the on that head of yours. You don't think it's going to mess your hair up? Well, no. And first night he was there, well, we didn't worry about Charlie coming over the wire because headquarters coming to pull guard duty around the whole compound.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you about that. Okay.
And we would take our clothes off and just number of shorts, t-shirts, and go to sleep. Well, there he is still laying over on top of his blankets, fully clothed. I said, hey, man. Andy, I said, get your clothes off, get in bed. He said, no, Charlie might come. I said, you don't have to worry about Charlie. He ain't coming here. if he does, you will know about it real quick. And if you get time, to put your clothes on. We had a lot of fun with him. We called him Mr. Clean. And we sent him over to the beer tent, company next across the road for us to get a case of beer. Well, he came back with a case of beer. It was all open. I said, why did you get it open? He said, well, they wouldn't sell it to me the other way. I said, okay. So we hadn't been able to get to the PX. It had been a while, because you were allowed 6 cases of beer a month, and people who didn't drink, we'd use theirs.
Right.
Rations. $3.15 a case of beer. $2.40 for a case of soda water. Whiskey was, Crown Royal was $3.15.
Good Lord.
A quart, I believe. And then it went on down. Vodka was 95 cents a quart. And we had a guy there in Long Bend. He was, I didn't know he drank until one day I saw him sober. He came in cussing and everything, raising hell, and he had a big Bowie knife, and he cut his hand on that.
Wow.
And I said, Pop son, what's wrong with you? That's what we called him, because he was 38 years old.
Wow.
I was probably the next oldest in the platoon outside of platoon sergeant and squad sergeant. I was 25. I turned 25 over there.
Wow.
And he said, he was talking about somebody giving him a rash of shit someplace. Well, at the first of the month, Smirnoff was $1.15 a quart. And he bought that, and as the month went by, the vodka got cheaper and cheaper. And he, when we woke up in the morning, he'd reach down his boot, pull that bottle out, blub, 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 blub,
wow,
blub, blub, about 6 times, and then his feet hit the floor. We gave him a little award for the wino of the month. You know?
I can understand that.
And then he always carried vodka in his canteen, even on duty. I told him one time I was on my gate of the TOC, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And so I got the attention of the guy walking around headquarters, so take over here for about 5 minutes. I'm going to go find Pop's son. Well, I went back to the back gate. This was at night. There's no one there. I said, where in the hell did he go? And about that time, there was a trailer there with a tarp over it. He was laying down in there, sleeping. I said, Gaddis,
good Lord,
I'll catch you in this trailer again. I'm going to open up this back gate, and I'm going to roll you down this hill. That was the hill that went down to the amphitheater. I'm going to roll you down this hill in this Jeep, trailer. And he, okay, he got up, went over and sat down in his chair. I said, don't get back in the trailer. Not until we get relieved in the morning.
Right.
They catch you in that trailer sleeping.
You don't have to worry about your stripes anymore.
Yeah, well, he continued on carrying that vodka in that can too. And he drank a quart of it a day. And I had the unfortunate job of riding herd on a group of people guarding the main gates at the wharf. People on boats, on the liberty ships guarding holes. And I came around one evening and Pop's son was sitting under this gate shack, and the Quam Con and the white mice were standing out in front of it. And he was on the verge of being completely passed out.
Wow.
Anyhow, well, one night there at the dock, I pulled up and checked on one of my sentries at this gate, and this guy come in and says, I'm an ex-lieutenant colonel from the Army. He was on board one of those liberty ships as a seaman. And
he said, who cares?
Well, I said, who cares, you know? Anyway, he said, let me show you something. And he tried to take my 45 away from me. That was a mistake.
Boy, that was.
Because he was a little bit intoxicated, and I just said, get in here. I had my Quantum right in the back, and he rode up front with me, and I said, what ship are you on? And he pointed it out, and I went up, stopped and got out. I said, you stay here, Bubba, Quantum, and you come with me. Started walking up the gangplank, and whichever officer was on duty there at the watch wanted to know what was going on. I said, this is so-and-so, military police. I need to see the captain.
Good Lord.
Yep. And I said, okay, you sure you need to see the captain? I said, you bet I do. I don't care if you got to wake him up. I want to see him. Well, led us to this bulkhead, the hatch was, and captain's door, and knocked on it. He came to the door. He's an old white-haired man, about 65 or 70. And I said, what the hell is all this about? I said, I started explaining to him. I said, this guy here, one of your seamen, tried to take my 45 away from me at the gate down there. And he just reached over the side and he grabbed what looked like a riding crop. And he said, come here. And he started beating that guy with that riding crop. And he was hollering, please, Captain, don't do this. Please don't do that. And the captain said, 5 days, no pay. And you will work a month in the machine room down there, the boiler room.
Good
no. That's where all the sweating goes on.
Right.
I said, thank you very much, Captain. Sorry to bother you, but I thought you might want to hear this right now. I said, I could have took him downtown and booked him, but I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I probably got more good out of that than if I took and wrote him up.
He may never. He probably never did again. I think I really was Lieutenant Colonel.
Who knows? I didn't.
Right. It wasn't worth finding out.
It wasn't worth finding out. Shoot, man. It's. I got to see a Puff the Magic Dragon.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. In action.
Cool.
It was a bridge leading over to Cholon, and it was just about half, three-quarter mile down from the dock. And this thing, it spewed out fire that looked like a steady stream of light. And they were tearing Charlie up somewhere about 300 yards from me. And I went and I saw. I didn't go across the bridge. I turned around, went back to the dock because I knew there wasn't going to fire on that. The last few days I was in Saigon, I was me and three other E-4s and one sergeant. We were in charge of escorting the 25th Infantry Division inside, in country off the docks.
Oh, okay.
And we were taking them out to a staging area at Coochee, outside of Cholon. They were going to, somebody, Big Red Wall was going to pick them up and take them to Coochee. Well, on one of the trips out, with me and my partner coming back, to go back down to the docks to get another convoy. And at that time, one of those monks was using a gallon of gas and wasn't going nowhere. There were about 1,000 of those yellow robed dudes walking up. I had to thread my way through the traffic there, foot traffic. And all of a sudden, we heard a thump in the back of the Jeep. I was doing about 10 miles an hour. We didn't even hesitate. We just bailed out.
Right.
It was in low gear, so it wasn't going to run over anybody. And it went on about another 30, 40 feet down the road and came to a halt. Stopped engine, died. Well, we cautiously edged up there and looked in the back of the Jeep, and it's a big old rock. Somebody threw a rock.
Jeez.
And this is just past the big fish market there. Oh man, talk about a fish market. It curled your nose.
Were you ever throwing that rock and put hair on your chest, I tell you.
It also made something else pinch up. I'm neglected to say anything about honey wheels and honey wagons in Korea.
Mm-hmm. What's a honey well?
It's a big hole in the ground filled up with human excrement.
Oh, okay.
And then they got a big old wooden keg on the back of this old deuce and a half from the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
With a big old spigot on the back. They fill it up, they go through all the villages, and they send out guys A-frame and 5 gallon buckets.
Clean it out.
They clean out all the benzos, that's what they call.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring it back to the honey wagon, they pour it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go out to the rice paddies and fill up the honey well.
Mm-hmm.
Those things could appear out of nowhere overnight. Two of our guys were chasing this dude down a dark alley in Weijiangbu, and they all three ran off into the honey well. Their equipment and their uniforms and everything laid out on the concertina wire for 3 months, and the smell never did get come out of them. Finally, they just put them in the trash.
Right.
Oh. That is unbelievable. You would not believe that. And all those hilltops over there, the bear, it wasn't Agent Orange, it was napalm that did it. And I talked to a guy in a bar here, 4, 5, 6 years ago. He was over in 85.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's still that away. And he was part Korean.
Yeah.
He was half breed, part Korean. His mama was Korean and his daddy was white. He said, yeah, it's still unbelievable over there. And the way they'd take a hog to market, they'd get the hog drunk on mockley, which is a rice wine.
Mm-hmm.
If you drink enough of it, you'll go blind. But they'd pour it down his hog's throat till he was drunk, and then they could tie him upside down on the back of his bicycle and pedal him to the market.
You'd be a happy camper.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I always wondered how they did that.
Well, when I was at Long Bend, we'd every now and then go over to Benoit to open this for breakfast over there.
Mm-hmm.
And one morning we was going along there, and there was a dump truck stopped in the road, and a mangled bicycle, and there was a body laying in the road. What had happened is the Vietnamese, he had got underneath the rear wheels of the dump truck, and it was fully loaded.
Good Lord.
And his hat, his head was about as flat as a pancake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big, about a 5 foot diameter circle around his head that was green, gray, and red, because he'd squeezed everything out of his brains. And we were going to breakfast. And some mornings, we didn't get over there all the time, just occasionally. Most time we ate food that we bought at the PX or begged or borrowed sea rations, you know. Because we were given an allowance to buy food. Because we didn't have a mess hall. And one morning, first morning we drove by there and I looked at it. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little building built out over what I call a stock pond.
Mm-hmm.
And the water underneath it was just frothing.
Hmm.
And there was a little ramp built out from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to noticing the second time by, there were little heads sticking above the tin on the side of the little building. What it was a community bathroom.
Ah, okay.
All right, and they unloaded their business in there,
right.
And the carp ate it, and then they caught the carp.
Right.
And I ate them.
Got recycled again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Most people wouldn't believe you if you start telling what you'd seen and what. It just blew my mind on certain occasions over there. But I saw a little kid with gangrene. And this woman, old Korean woman, wanted me to take him to the hospital. I said, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the gate. So I called the medics, and they came down and looked at him. They did take him up there, but I think he lost his part of his leg.
Yeah.
He had pulled over a pot of boiling water on him. And then every now and then you'd have some kid with a artillery assimilator.
Oh, yeah.
Up, blow his hand off with it.
Yeah.
I even had to pronounce one kid dead because he was blue.
Hmm.
He'd been swimming in the river.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't breathing. No pulse. And I told Cho, I said, tell her that he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing I can do or the medics
right.
can do because he's not breathing,
he's
no heart
breathing. He ain't going anywhere.
No.